Hello and welcome to the Donation Coder Podcast 5.5, part two of a two-part interview with David Allen, recognized as one of the world's most influential thinkers on productivity. Please visit www.donationcoder.com for more information and the link to part one of the interview. Take it away, Mouser.
Can you tell when a new idea comes to you whether it's going to work or not?
Actually, you can't. It's more like what new tools show up and what new forms show up that have some secret to them or some secret sauce embedded in them that might facilitate some of the things that aren't facilitated otherwise. For instance, when mind mapping software showed up, that began to, you know, that was a great trick because it allowed me to, you know, it gave me a tool that when I pulled it up, it could get my brain engaged in a certain way that I wouldn't get engaged when I was using a linear format like a word processor or something else. So that was, you know, those kinds of things are very interesting. You know, what are the new forms out there that if I get engaged with that form, it gets me to think about things in different ways and kind of tricks me into that or makes that easier for me to give myself permission to move into that level of focus, you know, or not.
Right.
Essentially, you know, nothing has changed from the core principles. That's like, does gravity change? No. You know, keeping stuff in your head is going to create stress. I don't care how old you are, where you are, what tool you use. So anything that's going to help you distribute stuff out of your head is obviously going to facilitate that. And, of course, you know, new tools to help you get stuff out of your head. Post-its were a great tool, you know, because they function much like your brain does. It likes to have the idea and then later on figure out where it goes. So you can write on a post-it and then move the post-it around. Well, that was actually a phenomenal. All it did was just map to what the way we really think. That's why, you know, a lot of what I did in the first book was describe some of the models that I watched how we actually really think. For instance, the natural planning model, you know, where you sit down and say, well, how do you go out to dinner? And if you think about how you think about that, you'll see that's a very functional and very, very viable model to apply to bigger stuff. Funny thing is that a lot of the natural stuff people aren't doing naturally or normally. You know, the way you go to dinner is you have your intention gets you to think about it, and then you create some vision of what it looks like, and then you brainstorm, you know, all the stuff that vision created in your mind, and then you organize all that, then you get action items on what you do. So you actually naturally do a very powerful process just walking around. So all I did was begin to identify what some of those common things are and look at them in terms of what's the principle and can we apply that to other things we do.
Well, let me ask you this. Can you recognize the kinds of people who are going to have the hardest trouble using GTD and why they struggle or why they start doing well with it when you coach them and then fall off the wagon and then how you get them back on? Can you talk a little bit about?
Yeah, well, it's a good question and a big one, you know, in terms of what you just asked. A common question that's embedded in that is, you know, who takes to this, right or left brainers? You know, the really organized people, the people that sort of get this to begin with or not. And I think that comes from a bit of a limited conception of what you think GTD is. See, most people's perception of GTD is the organizing get control piece and not so much the vision and perspective piece. So that's why a lot of my later stuff and my new public seminar, I focus a good bit more on look, folks, the perspective piece is just as important. But the reason the control piece was first and why so many people take to it is you can't get perspective without control. And the best practices for getting control are some of the most lacking out there because most people have visioned themselves out way beyond what their systems are capable of handling very well. So a lot of the popular conception of GTD is, gee, a labeler and folders and lists and so forth. And I understand that, you know, and that's where we start because that's the most lacking piece for a lot of people. But the truth is, and all this comes back around to, yes, if somebody is highly organized, they'll tend to take to that piece of it probably easier, quicker, better, and stick with it more than somebody who's sort of the crazy maker, out of control visionary out there. However, the person who's very good at the detail and the list and so forth may be really out of control in terms of 30 and 40,000 foot thinking. And so, you know, it's hard to tell. If somebody's got a messy desk, they may have a very clear head about 30 or 40,000 foot stuff. They're just not too good at the runway. But somebody who's got a nice clean desk may be totally out of control in their head. So it's a little more subtle than the simple organized versus disorganized model out there. So ultimately, I've never seen, and we haven't done necessarily rigorous research, but certainly a lot of anecdotal data, is that there's no difference between male, female, right brain, left brain, yin, yang. I haven't even seen any cultural bias. out there. I mean, I've done this work in Asia and South America and Saudi Arabia and Europe, you know, all over, and with all different kinds of people. There's probably more difference between you and your next door neighbor than there is between you and a similarly positioned professional, you know, in Saudi Arabia, you know, in terms of this kind of stuff. So there doesn't seem to be a bias about that in terms of who sticks with this and who doesn't. The one common denominator I've seen, Jesse, the people who tend to stick with this and sort of take to it and stick with it are the people who truly in their gut have a sense that they really want things to be better 18 months from now than they are right now. I mean, if you're in your comfort zone, making any of these kind of changes, even as simple as they are, is like, who needs it?
Right.
It's really the people that are on some level of fast track. And that doesn't mean they're type A, harder, faster, bigger, better. It may mean fast track, how I really care that I get off, you know, work early enough to watch my kids grow up. You know, and that matters to me. So it really matters. See, a lot of GTD, I think the value of it is eliminating residue. You know, psychic residue as well as physical residue. And the people most interested in getting rid of residue are the people who are moving. So if you think about that, that's why the strange paradox is the people in a way who need this the least are the people who take to it the most.
You know, we're conducting this experiment to sort of expose people to different techniques and ideas, mm-hmm. not to put them against each other, but to encourage people to sort of find what works best for them. Do you have any advice for someone who's doing that about what to look for or how to evaluate something? In other words, do you have to do it? Would you have to practice it for months, weeks, years before you could make a judgment? Or are you going to know after a couple of days this is not going to work for you?
I think it's a little hard to tell. Sometimes, you know, the stuff works when you can maintain conscious control of it. I mean, in the exaggerated form, I say, you know, oftentimes a lot of these things work when your inner geek shows up on a rainy Saturday. You know, and then you can sit down and dork around with all the cool things that software does. But when the fire hose of reality hits you square in the face on Monday morning, you know, that stuff just gets prehistoric pretty fast because you have to lose control of it. So your system, ultimately, your system has to be what you're willing to maintain when you have the flu and don't feel like doing system. That's as good as your system is,
right?
What you'll still maintain when you don't feel like it. So a lot of these things may seem good while you're feeling like doing the system. But the trick is, will it hold water when you don't, when you don't feel like doing it? And that's tricky business, too, because sometimes you need to hold yourself into the new pattern long enough so that you build a habit. Ultimately, I think that the ultimate test of all of this is, look, does it help you get stuff out of your head? You know, are you still thinking about it? Why are you still thinking about it? Your system's not handling it then. Or it's not relieving any kind of pressures. So, you know, people say, gee, David, how much of this do I need to do? And I say, well, is your head empty yet? But they go, no. I say, well, you got more to do. So that's my criterion. I say, look, there's still something on my mind. What do I need to do to get this off my mind? Because there's an inverse proportion between on mind and getting done. So I'd evaluate your system by to what degree does it actually get things off my mind? And if it does, fabulous. I mean, I know a lot of people. I know people that, you know, that set up, they're macro freaks in Excel, and they built all kinds of programs to run for themselves. And they'll keep all these lists, and all of their GTD-ishness is done on an Excel spreadsheet. Now, I don't teach that because unless that is how you sort of live and breathe, and you really are willing to work that, very few people on the planet are willing to make that consistent enough and build a system so that it's all consistent enough to be able to do that on a regular basis. So it could very well work for one person because they're just wired that way. But that's not something I would teach as a general principle called, hey, the best way to do this is an Excel spreadsheet. That's not at all.
So let me wrap up with just two last questions.
Okay.
The first one is, if you have any advice sort of out of the GTD range about sleep, health, exercise, do you drink coffee or tea? Give us your views of building a better life outside of the specifics of GTD.
Well, you know, you know, you just stepped into an area I'm still working on, trying to figure out, okay, what bad habits do I need to get rid of and better habits do I need to install? So I don't know anybody who's ever finished that game. So I'm still working on those myself as well. I think a lot's just about what affects your energy. You know, I'm just learning. I mean, I'm over 60 years old, and I'm still just getting to the point where I'm realizing there's certain kinds of work I do better in the morning and certain kinds of work I don't do better in the morning. Now, I've, you know, talked to a lot of people in my network who figured that out a long time ago. They get up and they write from 6 in the morning until 8 in the morning. And then, you know, because they know that's when they write best. And so, you know, I've had such an ad hoc life in a way that there's almost been no common denominator. It's kind of been hard for me to set up those kinds of systems. But I think those really work, you know, to understand those and to see, gee, what works for you. And sometimes things work in the short term that you know don't work in the long term. And so that's just a matter of discipline and maturity in terms of just sticking with it. So, sure, any of those kind of things work. I drink coffee, but probably would be healthier in the long run if I didn't. But, you know, one thing at a time.
Any last piece of advice for someone who might be interested in getting things done and jumping right into it? See, what would be the best small piece of advice you could give someone?
Well, I think the main thing is make sure you've got good capture tools around and get in the habit of offloading things out of your mind. That's the first and biggest habit that most adults need to change or enhance. Is essentially the willingness to capture stuff. So small little legal pads at every phone, you know, a little portable little notepad. You know, we sell on our website the note taker wallet, which I designed simply because there weren't any out there that were really good that had the right kind of pen with them, so you could keep it with you in your pocket all the time. And, you know, things like that, as well as a good just plain old three-sided in basket, you know, wood wire plastic thing in front of you on your desk that you can throw stuff into. So that's the first thing, is just building good capture tools and good habits about that. That'll be the critical piece. Of course, you've got to tie that into, sooner than later, figuring out how to get those buckets and list empty, you know, and processing your in basket and getting some sort of list management tools. So those are the critical things, I think, to begin with, is, you know, make sure you've got good capture capability and good list making capability. You know, that'll take you a long way starting to implement this. And also give yourself, you know, go easy on yourself. It actually takes people sometimes 1 to 2 years to start to really change these habits, as simple as they are. You know, it's kind of hard to fault them in terms of just these behaviors and best practices. But the trick is how do you get yourself to do them consistently? Because that'll take it to a whole nother game. I mean, it's one thing to have 90% of everything out of your head. It's quite another to have 100% out. Because if 90% out, you just still don't know what's hiding in there. So training yourself to truly have everything out, that can take a while. So just give yourself permission to just keep coming back to the well, and people fall off, they'll get enthused, and then then the inspiration fades away and they go back to old habits. Me too, you know, but you just keep coming back around. So I say mostly just stay in touch. You know, there's a lot of information on our website, my book. You know, I'd say that the third or fourth time you read through Getting Things Done, there'll be different books every time you read it. To be ready for another cut of information in there. So sticking around with the information keeps peeling the onion back.
Let's give everyone your website. It's www.davidco.com, and
yep,
that's one word.
davidco.com. Yep.
And they can go there to...
And there are several free articles they can get. If they go into the store, you can download some free PDFs that'll, you know, more detail on this stuff.
Well, David, I really want to thank you for speaking with us. It's been a pleasure and enlightening.
Same here. Thanks, Jeff.
I'd like to invite everyone who's interested in time management and productivity systems to come visit donationcoder.com, where you can participate in our 3-month experiment discussing various frameworks designed in order to help people figure out what techniques work best for them. And so we'll see you on the website, or see you at the David Co. forum or website as well. And thank you very much.
Well, that wraps up part 2 of this special Donation Coder podcast. We'd like to thank David Allen for joining us. And don't forget to visit the Donation Coder forums, where you can be a part of the great Getting Organized experiment of 2006. We've got lots more great content lined up for future podcasts, so join us next month for the next installment. For now, this is Java Jones signing off.
DonationCoder.com, for connoisseurs of fine software.